జయం విశ్వపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర సదస్సు శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తు వేదాంత గోస్వామి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదకి జయం నితిలీలా ప్రవిష్టో విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర సదశ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్త సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదకి అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీల హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోప గోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామికి మాయపూర్ ధామికి మధురపురి ధామికి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి ద్వారకాపురి ధామికి గంగమాయికి యమున మాయికి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి ఓర్ ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namaham Shubhadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhudaleshwari Bhaktivedanta Swami Dinamini Namaste Sarasvadevam Gauravani Prajarini Narvishesha Shunyavani Paschatya Desha Dharini Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయ చక్షురుణ్మిలితాం యేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టాం స్థాపితాం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదా మహ్యం దదాదిం స్వపదాంబికం వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురుం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావదూతం పరిజనాసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాం సహగణలలితాం శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాం చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగల్ నమా ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి నమా ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి నామినే శ్రీవర్షభానవిదేవి దైదాయ కృపాబ్ధయే కృష్ణ సంబంధ విజ్ఞానం దాయిదే ప్రభవే నమః మాధుర్యోజ్వల ప్రేమాగ్నిర్శ్రీరూగానుగభక్తి శ్రీగౌరకరుణాశక్తి విగ్రహాయ నమోస్తుతే నమస్తే గౌరవాణి శ్రీమూర్తయే దీనధారిణే రూపానుగవిరుద్ధావసిద్ధాంతధ్వాంతహారిణే నమో గౌరకిశోరాయ సాక్షాద్ వైరాగ్యమూర్తయే విప్రలంబర సాంబోధే పదాంబుజాయ దే నమః నమో భక్తి వినోదాయ సచిదానందనామిని గౌరశక్తిస్వరూపాయ రూపానుగవరాయ దే గౌరావిర్భవ భూమేస్త్వం నిర్దేష్టా సజ్జనప్రియ వైష్ణవా సార్వభౌమ శ్రీ జగన్నాథాయ దే నమః వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధూభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం భావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః నమో మహాబలన్యాయ కృష్ణ ప్రేమ ప్రదాయతే కృష్ణాయ కృష్ణ చైతన్య నామ్నే గౌరద్విషే నమః పంచతత్వాత్మకం కృష్ణం భక్తరూపస్వరూపకం భక్తావతారం భక్తాఖ్యం నమామిం భక్తసాత్వికం హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధు జగల్పదే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంద రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే జయదాం సురదౌభాంగోర్ మమ మందమదేర్గది మత్సర్వస్య పదాంభోజౌ రాధామదనమోహనౌ దివ్యవృందారణ్యకల్పద్రుమాదౌ శ్రీమన్రత్నాకర సింహాసనస్థౌ శ్రీ శ్రీరాధా శ్రీల గోవిందదేవౌ ప్రేష్టాలిభిః సేవ్యమానౌ స్మరామి శ్రీమన్ రాసరసారంభీర్వంశీవటతటస్థిత కర్షాన్వేణుస్వనేర్గోపిర్గోపినాథాశ్రయేస్తునాః తప్తకాంచనగౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుస్తుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ So, we'll have today class here and then on tomorrow in Manor and then Monday again here, Monday afternoon, same time. And on Tuesday, we'll have the class at Anil's place in Stanmore. That is the class we missed, Srimad Bhagavatam, last Sunday. Yeah. So, this is the program for the 4 days now. Now, before I go into Bhakti Sutram, Narada Bhakti Sutram. There's a lot of things to talk about because when we don't understand certain things in spiritual life, simply hearing something and letting it go through the other ear doesn't help. It has to have some significance. After all, the sages, out of their great compassion for the human society, they left behind this treasure of the Vedic knowledge. And so therefore, it is important to know how the Vedic path takes a person on a progressive level, in a progressive route. So in order to do that, I just thought I should go back again and start from certain stage where one has to understand what we are talking about. If it is just a story I'm repeating here, it's okay. You can hear the story, you can leave the story there itself. It doesn't matter. But if it is not gone in and the message is not understood properly, there's a lot of misunderstanding comes from that and the whole thing is a waste of time at the end. This is the main thing. We have to understand this because they didn't waste their time in the forest and to give us this valuable literature, Vedic literature, in order that we change our way of thinking, misunderstanding from our head in so many things. And in order to move it away from our side, they have given a systematic way of progressing in that path of spiritual life. They have established that already and given to us. And that was followed for thousands of years by great authorities in the Vedic tradition. All the great acharyas, they will not deviate from that and they will not make compromise on that. Our tendency is always to adjust the world according to our nature. We don't want to change. We want to adjust the world according to our thoughts and our way of doing things. And that's where all the problem starts. In fact, therefore, what I thought was today, as we have decided before, that we want to start Ishopanishad here. So to start the Ishopanishad as an introduction to that, another few classes, I'm just going to talk about the Vedic tradition to understand it properly. Because lack of this understanding causes so much misunderstanding in people's mind and they get distracted in all directions and lose that track what they are supposed to follow or they are supposed to follow. Let us first understand what this Vedic tradition means. Vedic tradition means. Vedic tradition, as you know, that it has a very, very deep level of understanding of the spiritual side of life. That's where Vedic tradition comes from. All the other traditions in this world, whether it is Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Jainism, any other religious process, their all origins comes from Vedas. Their all origins comes from Vedas. That is a known thing, whether they accept it or not, that is another thing. Some people may accept it, some people may not accept it. The Upanishads knowledge has gone into Bible. Upanishads knowledge has also gone into Quran. And there is so many different places you will see the touch of this Vedic tradition existing in one form or the other. Why is this Vedic tradition so important? In the Vedas, again, if you look into the system, you will see there that the original Vedic tradition, as it was established, that they will only accept Vedas as the authority. Authority is the Vedas. Vedas are the authority. Paramarthiyam. Paramarthiyam means in the absolute platform. In the absolute platform, only Vedas are the authority. So, why I have chosen Ishopanishad was, Prabhupada took Ishopanishad as one of the most authentic Upanishads. As you know, there are so many Upanishads. Upanishads means what? Upanishads means the end of knowledge. Vedantam. Vedantam comes from Upanishads, isn't it? Upanishads is the end of knowledge. That means nothing there after that. That's the end. There you have reached that final state. That's why it's called Upanishads. So Upanishads, everyone who are in the Vedic tradition, they insist on this, that the authority is the Upanishads at the end. Authority is the Upanishads at the end. So Sayanacharya, a famous Acharya at that time, long, long ago, he wrote commentary on all the Upanishads, on all the Vedas as well. He wrote, Sayanacharya's commentary is famous. Sayanacharya is known for that. His commentary is very famous. So he mentioned, he gives some definition there. Why Vedas necessary in life? Why? What is the importance of this Vedic knowledge? So his point was this. Ishta prapti anishta parihara yoho alaugiyam upayam yaha grandaha vedayati. That is how he defined it. Ishta prapti anishta parihara yogaha. Ishta prapti means you want to achieve something in life and you want to attain that. That's one. Anishta prapti is another one. You want to avoid all the distress in life. Ishta prapti and anishta pariharam yogaha. And alaugiya upayam yaha grandaha vedayati. Alaugiyam. Alaugiyam means we have two categories here, laugiyam and alaugiyam, isn't it? Laugiyam means material. Laugiyam means material. Alaugiyam means which is outside this material world. Which is outside this material world. Why it is spoken like that? The reason for that is that when he wrote his commentary on Rigvedam, on the first of the Vedas or the Rigvedam, when he wrote this commentary, Sayanacharya wrote a commentary on the Taittiriya Upanishad on Yajurvedam. Yajurveda of the four Vedas, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvana Vedam. For the Yajurvedam, he wrote his commentary on the Taittiriya Upanishad side, which is known as the Samhita. We'll come to all that in detail. So, so he mentioned there, you want to get what you like in this world, and you don't want any distress to come in this world. This is why we are in this world, isn't it? That's what we are fighting against all the time. You want to have something what you like, and you want to avoid something what you don't like. So, this cannot be achieved simply by our endeavor alone. This cannot be achieved simply by our endeavor alone. Our endeavor means laugiya upayam. Laugiya means our material way of achieving something, a goal. So, for example, people are working very hard to become happy in this world. But you can see from, if you observe carefully, you will notice that simply by working hard, people don't become happy. There will be some other distress coming from somewhere else in some form. And when that distress comes, they don't know how to solve the problem. So what happens normally is that they go to work and working more to solve the problem, but it doesn't all end up in frustration at the end. So the reason for that is only by your material endeavor, you cannot bring that happiness in life. That's not possible. That's not possible. That is what is called laugiga upayam. Laugiga means from a material plane, you are trying to work and reach that state. So therefore it is not possible. Therefore it says here, alaugigam upayam yaha grandasa vedayati. Vedas talk to us about that method or that process which is not belonging to this laugiga upayam. Laugiga upayam, material endeavor. Which is not material endeavor. Material endeavor will not make us solve all the problems of this world or even in our human society. We know that, isn't it? We know that it is not possible to remove our distress in this world simply by material endeavor. If you try very hard to improve the things, on one side you will be solving the problem, other side something else comes. In some form it appears in another way, another angle. It happens all the time. It happens. Only thing you have to be a little bit reasonable about these things, that when you start observing things, you will notice on one side your endeavor is going on, the other side distress is coming in another form. And at the end of the life, you have to leave this world in frustration. That is what happens in many, many people's case, that most of us here now, most of them are 50 plus. There is not a lot of time left in this life to perform sadhana and to attain perfection. That's not going to happen. We will have to forget that. That at this stage in life, now if you think that at this stage in life you are going to execute sadhana and have to reach perfection in life, it is not going to happen. Just time is not there. So it is important, because of that, whatever we do and understand at this stage in life has to be straight, and there cannot be any compromise on that. And if we start making compromises there, Krishna will laugh at us, seeing our stupidity. That's all I can say about that, because this has happened in the history for so many people at so many different times. So many people, they exit this world in total frustration. They thought that they were executing spiritual life, and at the end they had to leave this world in total frustration. Why? Because the message was not taken seriously. They thought that they are engaged in spiritual life, and they had all that misunderstanding in their head. Why? This is where Shastram comes in. Shastram is there to guide us in the right direction. Are we doing the right thing? Are we going in the right direction? This misunderstanding has to go from the head. If it doesn't go, then it will stay as it is. You might as well waste the time. And there are so many steps in spiritual life, so many stages where one is qualified for what. It tells us very clearly. So, anyway, coming back to that, what cannot be understood directly, what cannot be known by inference, that is what Vedas are talking about. That is generally the definition of the Vedic literature. The great sages who went to the forest, they saw the extreme subtle level, the reason behind various things happening. And out of their complete compassion for the human species, they left it for us to take advantage of that. That is Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge is that. The knowledge what you acquire from all other places is only a material direction, a material endeavor, and that won't solve all the problems. Okay, so now, things that can be directly perceived in this world, directly understood. For example, that the from direct perception, whatever you see in this world, to understand that you don't need Vedas. Vedas are not required for that, for direct perception. Knowledge from direct perception. Anything what you achieve or what you receive through direct perception doesn't require Vedas. Doesn't require Vedas because it's directly perceived by the senses. Similarly, that information what you don't require Vedas is inference. Inference, for example, just like the weather forecast, for example. Weather forecast. What do? They look into certain things in the nature, and through their experiments or through their observation, they have come to certain conclusion. If these things happen, these things must follow that. In that way, they forecast the weather, isn't it? So that is called inference. Inference. That you are forecasting based on your past experience and based on certain information that has been received from the nature. Also, that is a kind of knowledge which is known as inference. Anumanam. In Shastram it's called Anumanam. So, Pratyaksham and Anumanam. Direct perception and inference. These are the two processes through which all the knowledge in this world is achieved. All the knowledge in this world is achieved in that way. Either through direct perception or through inference. Therefore, it's called Pratyaksham or Anumanam. Pratyaksham or Anumanam. These two processes, Pratyaksham and Anumanam, or direct perception or inference, either of them is capable of giving the information what it can and doesn't require the help of Vedas. Vedas doesn't come for that. Vedas are not meant for that. these two processes will give you certain understanding of life, and you are limited by that. You don't have any. But beyond than these two, there is a higher thing to understand, and that is what Vedas do. So therefore, when he spoke about that, pratyakshena anumityava yastupayo na vidyate vedam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. That is how it says there. That pratyakshena anumityava yastupayo na vidyate. What you cannot get by direct perception, what you cannot get by inference, na vidyate edam vidandi vedena. That is what is spoken in the Veda. This is why tasmal vedasya vedada. That is known from the Vedas. This is how Vedas begin with. Vedas begin with this understanding that your so-called other knowledge in this world, whatever you have got here, you know that it is very limited. We don't have any idea what's going to happen after death. We don't have any idea why we have got this body. We don't have any idea why we have got taken birth in a particular place. We haven't got any idea why we were born to certain parents. Lot of ignorance. And there is no answer to all these questions. In the pratyaksha, direct perception, or through inference, you can't come to any conclusion from that. It is in areas like this, what happens after death, all these questions. If you want an answer, Veda says, evam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. That answer is from the Vedas. So Vedas deal with an area which is already not approachable by the process of direct perception or inference or whatever it is. It cannot achieve that right there. Even the science is under this material process. Science also cannot enter there. Science is limited. Science can only, it's just like either direct perception or inference. This is science again. Science also has no entry there. So, wherever you find, through the process of knowledge, so, therefore, you can see there, in science also there is a lot of inference, isn't it? They'll talk about protons, electrons, neutrons, and all that. And there is a lot of theory behind it. They have created how they have observed in their own scientific experiments, what they have found, and they have come to those conclusions. But Vedas have nothing to do with all these things. Vedas are gone beyond than this. The sages, when I'm talking about sages, you must know what this is referring to, the sages. If you have read Prabhupada's books, you will see there are certain things referred to Sadhu, Shastram and Guru. Isn't it? Sadhu, Shastram and Guru. Generally all devotees will talk about Sadhu, Shastram and Guru. What does this Sadhu, Shastram, Guru means? Sadhu Shastram Guru means, Shastram we all know, all the Vedic literature is Shastram. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanishads, they are all Shastram. Sadhu is the one that is refers to the sages actually. It's not every modern day Sadhu is an authority. That's not acceptable. Only those who were responsible for this Vedic knowledge to come to this world, they alone are considered Sadhus. Others are not perfect. Even if you go back into the tradition background, backwards, you will see many others who have appeared in the recent past or even 1,000 years ago, they cannot be accepted as sadhus always. They may do certain things in line with the Shastram. But those who through whom the Vedic knowledge has come to this world, they are the perfections. They are the perfection of the spiritual life. Through whom? Because they have experienced that and realized it and they delivered it to us before they left this world. Before they left this world. You will see there that those sages whose names are mentioned in the Bhagavadam are belonging to that category. They are Krishna's friends, so to say. Simply to put it like that. They are Krishna's friends. You will see wherever Krishna was there, they will be there at the same time. Atri, Vasishta, Angiras, Vishwamitra, and Jamadagni, and many others like that. There's a whole list of people. When Sukadeva Goswami, when they came there to speak Bhashimal Bhagavatam to Parikshit, they all are assembled there. They were all there. Durvasa Maharshi, they are all in that category. It is through them that this Vedic knowledge has come to this world. Vedic knowledge has come to this world. And because, therefore, they are sadhus. They are sadhu. Krishna's closest friends, in other words. So it's through them that this Vedic knowledge has survived in this world. They've given us this through their experiments and through their realizations. So, so the small Vedasya Vedata. So, there it says, Sakala Devadhanam Dharmasya Parabrahma Dhanmasya Pradipadakani Vedaha. So, all the principles behind it is, that means all the Devadas, demigods, and Dharmam, religious principles, all that is explained in the Vedas. So, if you ask the question, when we say these things, the question naturally will come, can there be no fault in the Vedic literature? Are there no fault in the Vedic literature? If you ask that question, this mistake, fault, and all these things, this is all in relationship with the intelligence and the mind. It has nothing to do with the Vedic literature. You see, we are used to this habit of seeing everything through mind and intelligence. Because we got used to it so much that we test everything through mind and intelligence and then accept it. That's what we generally do, isn't it? Through mind and intelligence, you test something and then if it's acceptable, you accept it. If you ask the same question, does the Vedic conclusions, are they all not subjected to the same mistake and the same fault? The answer is no. Reason being that it is not coming from the platform of mind or intelligence. It's not coming from the platform of mind and intelligence. Because it is coming from that source which is actually responsible for the whole creation. From the source, from that source it's coming. From that source it's coming, and it's coming through these great personalities. When they have given us Vedic knowledge, you will notice this, it has come from that source which is free from mistakes, free from faults, and therefore you cannot attribute any fault or mistake towards that knowledge that's coming from the Vedic literature. This is the Vedic tradition. Vedic tradition is like that. So, therefore it is called nirdoshatvam. Nirdoshatvam means there is no dosham or faults in that. Aptavajanam, another word used. Aptavajanam, that is the conclusion of the sages and that's it. You cannot ask questions on that. You can't ask questions on that and verify it, whether it's correct or not. There is so many problems there. That is where a little bit of depth, in-depth understanding is necessary on the position of the Vedic literature. So Vedas is an authority. Vedas are an authority. The sages, they did not create the Vedas. They did not create the Vedas. That is only a channel through which the Vedas have come to this world. That's the difference. They didn't experiment or they didn't write the Vedas on their own intelligence or mind. Actually, it was revealed through them. In other words, they were just a channel through which it has come to this world. And they have seen those mantra, the realizations what they got, or the mantra they got. And these mantras are there in the nature. They are in the nature. And the sages are seeing that. Darshanam it's called. They are realizing it. And then they said that this is their realization they spoke. They spoke. And that is what is known as Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanavedam. And which has got again divisions, Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishads. Like that. There is a whole range of literature, Vedic literature we are talking about. When you know certain things in relationship to Vedic literature, you can understand that it does not come from a material plane. It doesn't come from a material plane. It's not coming from the mind, intelligence, body. It's coming from another plane, completely different. So, here it says that that there was a, in the recent times, a few hundred years ago, there was a great scholar called Kavyakanta Ganapati. He was a famous scholar in the Vedic tradition. Not only that, he has studied all Upanishads, Vedas, everything, and wrote commentaries on that, and led a life of considerable austerity and penances, and in a very advanced state he lived in this world, in a state of realization. He had one disciple and who came to study at a very early age to him. From Shastram, he came to study Shastram from him. He was only 16 or 17 years old when he came to him. And he didn't have a great understanding of the, or the knowledge of the language, Sanskrit. And Kavikanda Ganapati, who was a highly respected scholar at the, in his time, used to teach him the Shastram, and he used to learn from him. One day, suddenly, one afternoon, around 2 o'clock, although he was not learned very much, he started speaking something. Certain things he started speaking. Kavikanda Ganapati, who was sitting next to him, without any hesitation, started writing it down, what he was talking about. What he was talking about. He wrote the whole thing. For 16 days he continuously spoke various things. Kavikanda Ganapati wrote the whole thing down, and then that brahmachari who came to study from him, he left and went to the Himalayas. He has never seen him after that. And Kavikanda Ganapati wrote a commentary on what he spoke. And when he spoke, he realized it. This is some of the Vedic literature that was lost during the course of time and which was still present in this world. Not in the form of books, but it's present there in the form of sound. He captured that. This disciple captured that and he spoke. He wrote it down. And he wrote, the spiritual master is writing a commentary for the disciple's words. He wrote it down, and later on, the whole thing was published by Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan later. You can see that. They published this later so that others could get the benefit. They were part of the Vedic literature. So, Vedic literature is like that. You could understand that it comes through certain people at different times. And what has been lost, what's available now in the present world, is only a very small part of what has been there in the originally. What has been lost is still not traced yet. Very small part is available for us today. So this thing has happened in the recent times. So this Veda Shaka, that was known as Chandodarshanam. Chandodarshanam was the name he has given to this, and he wrote his commentary. And when you read that, you can understand that it is not from the recent times. Why? The whole language belonged to the same language like in the Rigveda times. Rigveda times. The same similar way it was spoken. And not only that, and the modern Sanskrit is different from that Sanskrit at that time. So, that Chandodarshanam, or which Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan has published, that it has a new revelation in the Vedic tradition. It was a new revelation in the Vedic tradition. So, when you read through it, you will notice that it has no significance with the modern world. It is coming from a completely ancient time. The history was coming through that. So, explanation is given like this. That personality, that disciple of Kavikanda Ganapati, his name was mentioned as Devaratan. That was. And this incident happened in a place called Renugamba Temple. That's where it happened. And Devaratan spoke all these things. Devaratan spoke all these things. Kavikanda Ganapati wrote it down, and he wrote the commentary on that, and it was later on published also. So, he was just a channel through which it has come about. It was just only a channel. Just like you have this flute when you play the music. The flute is there. The music is created by somebody. It comes through the flute. Flute is hollow, isn't it? It is hollow. Similarly, therefore, Vedas is called as Apaurusheyam. Apaurusheyam. So, in other words, the defect of mind and defect of the intelligence cannot touch the Vedic knowledge. Defect of the mind and defect of the intelligence cannot touch the Vedic knowledge. Any knowledge that has come to this world through mind and intelligence has certain defects. Has certain defects. Nothing is perfect. If somebody has spoken, or no matter who it is, they spoke something, if it is touched by mind and intelligence, it's polluted. You have to take it that way, to understand it that way. Anything that is touched by mind and the intelligence is polluted. And the mind is polluted. So, in the Kathopanishad, it says there, Yatha panchavati tishtande jnanani manasasaha buddhishchan avicheshtede tamahu paramam gadim. That in order that such a revelation has to happen, first thing is, our mind and intelligence has to be very quiet. quieting down. If they are not stable, if they are oscillating, or if there is any movement for the mind, or any movement for the intelligence, if it is happening, this knowledge cannot come through that mind and intelligence. So in other words, those through whom Vedas were revealed, they were personalities like that. They were gone beyond the mind and the beyond the intelligence. That is the platform of the soul, Angadim. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, this is exactly why Bhagavatam is famous. Why is Bhagavatam famous? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice this thing. When Sri Narada Maharshi came to talk to Vedavyasa Maharshi, he didn't tell him, now you write Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vedavyasa wrote down and started writing Srimad Bhagavatam. That is not how it happened. If you look at the verses, you will see there is a, in the first canto, in the fifth chapter, Vedavyasa is saying to him, Samadhina anusmara tadvijeshtidam. He says to the in the end of the conversation, Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyasa, Samadhina tad anusmara vijeshtidam. Then go into samadhi state, and whatever that is being revealed to you, you put it together. What comes through you? Samadhina tad anusmara vijeshtidam. Samadhina anusmaram anusmara tad vijeshtidam. In the samadhi state, whatever cheshta is happening inside, what goes through your samadhi realization, samadhina anusmara tad vicheshtidam. That cheshta, write it down. What happens in the samadhi state? That is how Srimad Bhagavatam came about. This is why Bhagavatam is given so importance. It's all samadhi bhasha. In samadhi, what has happened? Samadhina anusmara tadvijeshtidam. What has happened in the samadhi? Write it down. So go to that samadhi state of what I have spoken to you so far. And in that samadhi state, whatever realizations are coming, samadhina anusmara tadvijeshtidam. He says there in the Bhagavatam in the first canto. So anusmara means remember, anusmara means you remember that. What you have in samadhi, you are experiencing that. Samadhina anusmara tadvijeshtidam. He says like that. So, samadhi state, you state there, and in other words, if you are in the samadhi state, you are not on the material platform. You are not on the material platform. This is only possible for personalities like them, like Vedavyasa, like Sudeva Goswami, who can leave this body, leave this mind, leave this intelligence, and go to that particular plane. It's a different plane altogether. We can't get there. It is simply not possible. Our step is far, far below, a long way down. So we have to go a long way to get there. But we have to know that such a thing exists. Samadhina anusmara tadvijeshtidam. He says, in going to that, for them it was easier. Narada Maharshi could say to Vedavyasa, go to samadhi state. And whatever you are experiencing there, write it down. And teach that to Sudeva Goswami. That's how it happened later. And same way, when Sudeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam to Parikshit, it was in the samadhi state he spoke. That also is very clear in certain places in the Bhagavatam. If you read it every day, you'll see it. Some interesting places. So, all these things are not coming from the level of intelligence or from the plane of brain. Not from the plane of the brain. So, that what is coming from the source, which is the cause of the source of brain and the source of the mind and everything, that is what is known as Vedam. That's known as Vedam. And that Vedam has got these four divisions: Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvana Vedam. And we also say in another word, Trayi they call it. Trayi means Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam. Those three are called Trayi. And along with that, there is also Karmagandam, Upasana Kandam, Jnana Kandam. These three things are also attributed to Vedas in a different way. It is classified. Karmagandam, Jnana Kandam, Upasana Kandam. I have to say all these things because in order to give you a broader picture of the Vedic tradition, it's necessary we'll come to know this later, why it is like that. Karmagandam, Upasana Kandam, Jnana Kandam. Like that, three different sections. So, Vedantaha. Vedantam means Upanishads. Vedantam means Upanishads. Upanishads, why? Because in Vedas, there are sections. Mantram begins with, then Brahmanam, then Aranyakam, then Upanishads. When you look back into the tradition, you will see there that the original training was based on this Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasam. Four ashramam were there. And the four varnam also. Varnashrama dharma existed at that time. We have to discuss that now, but they are not itself the important thing. But I'll come to the other side of it. But at that time you will notice this difference between the modern world and the world that existed in the Vedic times. So, Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. The four things, four sections in the Vedas meant for four groups of people. For Brahmachari Mantram, Brahmanam for the householders, Aranyakam for Vanaprasthas, and Upanishad for Sannyasis. This is how it is classified. Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. And along with that, Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. For ashramam in that. So, the Brahmachari studied mantram. Garhastyam, in householder life, he practiced Brahmanam. In the Vanaprastha stage, he understood Aranyakam. And in the Sannyasa stage, he has to knew the perfection, which is known as Vedantam, the end of all the knowledge, which is Upanishads. Upanishads comes at that stage. So, when these four things existed, Varnashrama Dharmam existed at that time, that one has to come to that level of Upanishad study, knowledge of Upanishads, there is a lot of pre-qualifications for that. It was a mandatory requirement that a pre-qualification is necessary. Not that straight away you take to an Upanishad and studying, you won't get anywhere. You won't even understand it, what is being spoken about, why we respect Ishopanishad so much. You won't know it unless you know why it is so important, unless you know this background of the Upanishad's knowledge. Generally, it was not taught to people in masses. It was never taught. To get to that point, one has to go through a life and go through a lot of training before that and certain pre-qualifications, in other words, required for that. It was a necessary requirement, considered to be very essential, without which it was never taught to them. And if anyone tried to understand that, they were first screened whether they have reached that state. If they haven't, then they never were taught the Upanishads, for that matter. So, generally it is mentioned that once the Upanishads have studied and realized it, what happens is Jijnyasa Nivrti. Jijnyasa Nivrti means there is no more desire to know anything after that. You reach that stage. Can you imagine? That today we want to know more, isn't it? Every little bit, still you're not satisfied. Is there something beyond than that? You ask that question all the time. In spiritual life also, it's like that. We are doing a lot of things, not fully knowing what it is we are doing, but whether where it's going to take us, we haven't got a clue. But here, Upanishads' knowledge is such, once we have reached that state, there is no more inquiry after that. It stops there. Because why? You have become that knowledge. There's a big difference. Remember, I mentioned this before. Any material subjects, once you study it, you study with your mind and intelligence. And you, after studying, you can use that knowledge to do certain things in this life. That's all you can do. You can't get any more further than that. You can manipulate the material nature. You can improve your material conditions in this world. Certain things you can do with this knowledge. You can't do anything more than that. You don't know anything more than that after that knowledge. All material subjects are like that, isn't it? And even after you have studied all the material topics in this world, everything completely, still you won't be satisfied. You will still have an inquisitiveness to know what next. Isn't it? Upanishads are not like that. Upanishads, if you have studied and realized it, there is no more question after that. Jijnyasa, remember, Atado Brahma Jijnyasa. That Jijnyasa or inquisitiveness come to a dead end once Upanishads are realized. That is the the importance of Upanishads. Your knowledge seeking business stops there. Knowledge stops seeking business stops there. What do we say? The buck stops at the president's desk, isn't it? Same way. Upanishads are telling us the buck stops there. It doesn't go further because you can't go further. At that point, the whole realization is working. Not anymore the acquired knowledge through mind and the brain. It has no significance there anymore. So it's purely realized knowledge that is Upanishads. So in other words, prior to taking to Upanishads knowledge, there is a lot of requirements what Upanishads are demanding from us to grasp the message and the time and energy required to input into it so that that realization will happen before we leave this body. This is how significant the whole thing is. That we are not able to understand that because we are thinking it's another book, what is fine in the world. So therefore, when Upanishads knowledge is spoken, they are very, very careful about it, what they are talking about. In fact, Ekadasha Skandam in the Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but Upanishads. Nothing but Upanishads. On the one side, you see the highest knowledge Krishna is talking to Uddhava. And at the same time, have you noticed in Ekadasham, there is a lot of instructions on dharmam and executing dharmam, living a proper life in this world. These things are also spoken. Why is it like that? Because only if you have completed this part of dharmam, you will understand the other part of the Vedantam philosophy. If your life is not dharmic, if it is based on duplicity and hypocrisy, this knowledge in the Upanishads will not come, will not happen to that person, whoever it may be. So that is why dharmam is given a very high value because of this. So it is this dharmic way of life that prepares a person for receiving the knowledge of the Upanishads. Upanishads knowledge is like that. Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna summarized it. He took Kathopanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, and Ishopanishad, and few other Upanishads, and summarized it and put it in the few chapters in 10, 11, 12, 13, all that what we are discussing now in the Bhagavadam, it's all belong to the Upanishads. It has come from there. Krishna has brought it together and spoke to Uddhava the same thing. But the knowledge is the same. Nothing has changed. Which was spoken, the great sages have given before, that's the same message what Krishna has spoken to Uddhava also. So it's nothing new as such in the sense. But because in order to realize that knowledge, a certain discipline is necessary in life. A certain discipline is necessary in life. And if that discipline is not there, Krishna's point, as well as all the acharyas who have taught this Vedic knowledge to us, also is telling us, don't come to this. Don't hear this. It's not going to help you. You'll be wasting your time. This is the first thing they have spoken very outrightly, and they have put it bluntly in their commentaries. They have told us very bluntly in their commentaries. If you are not following this discipline in life, and dharmam is not accepted as a requirement, then Upanishad's knowledge, you cannot access it. You cannot access it. You won't get any access to it. So, that is another important thing. So, first thing is jijnyasa. Jijnyasa means this inquisitiveness goes away. Then what else is happening? Jihasa nivrti. Jihasa nivrti means... jihasa nivrti, prayapsa nivrti, chikrisha nivrti. Three, four things he has spoken here. So, that jihasa means that I'm feeling something I have to get rid of from me, which is costing me problems in my self-realization. This is jihasa. So, first thing is, when you reach this state, you realize it that there's nothing more to be known. I have realized that. Secondly, I also don't think anymore that I have to get rid of something from me. That feeling also goes away. That is called jihasa. Jihasa navrti, jihasa navrti. Then what is the third thing? Prayapsa navrti. Prayapsa means I have to achieve something in this life again. Something more I have to do. Because people's ambition is like that, isn't it? They have to achieve so many things in this life. We all have that in some degree or the other. I have to fulfill this, I have to attain this, I have to achieve this, I have to attain that. All these kind of things. Even in our, if you take devotee's life also, you will see, he will always say this, that I have to practice spiritual life, I have to go back home, back to Godhead, I have to find a spiritual master, I have to do this, I have to, so many things, I have to. So that means a lot of planning is going on still inside. That's what it means. Upanishads are saying this, once you have reached this stage, there is no more planning after that. There is nothing you have to after that. That's finished there. So, jijnyasa navrti, jihasa navrti, prayapsa navrti. And then the last one is called chikirsha navrti. That desire, when you have that right now, we have some feeling also, it's no fulfillment inside, isn't it? There's no fulfillment inside. So something you are looking for and you haven't got that fulfillment yet. So chikirsha nivrti means there is no more fulfillment needed. Fulfillment, you know what I'm saying, is that you are finding a lack of something in life that you still feel that there is something to be achieved to fulfill that dissatisfaction or incompleteness inside. That's what it means, incompleteness. That incompleteness goes away. You feel complete in everything. You feel complete in anything. I'm saying so many things which may be boring to you, but it's good to understand this reasoning behind it, because when you come to the, seriously, when you start studying Ishopanishad, you will notice the importance of it. So, jijnyasa navrti, jihasa navrti, prayapsa navrti, chikirsha navrti. All these things happens when Upanishads are realized according to the thing. So, in order to do that, Vedas starts with what is called karma. Vedas begins with karma. Karma. That is why majority of the part of the Vedas is related to Karmagandam, isn't it? Karmagandam is majority of the Vedas is Karmagandam. How to change a person. It is not easy to change a person. It is not very easy. People have such strong conditioning that they will immediately get trapped in that conditioning and they will not accept it easily. It is, you can observe that in your own life, experience that also. So therefore, what they have done in the Vedic tradition is they created what is known as samskara, different samskars, isn't it? You know that when I'm saying all these things, don't take this as the Hindu culture or anything. It has nothing to do with that. What has happened in the name of Hinduism is all nonsense what goes on. But Shastram talks something different. You can see there, for a child, before it takes birth, there are so many ceremonies listed there. Garbhadhanam, Jadakarmam, Pumsavanam, Seemandam, Chaulam, Ubanayanam, Karnavedam, Annaprashanam, and marriage, and so on and so forth, and after the death, samskaram, finally, after dying. Hundreds of them, right before taking birth, right up to death, he leaves this world, full of different purifying process. What's important to know, all this is related to body. All of them is related to body. Nothing else. Nothing to do with the soul. It's all related to the body. And what will happen is that, why is it done like that? That this is called Adhyaroba. Adhyaroba means that first, before you can prepare for this knowledge of spiritual life, you have to purify this body. And then, after that, you are denying that you are not this body. You see how it is done in a very clever way. Clever in the sense that they know the problem, that you are in a particular body. So, in order to understand all these things, the body has to be purified first. But what it does is, after you are purified, they are telling you, you are not this body. The very body which you have purified with all this efforts with this, all these samskaram, what they call this, what I listed before, which is different, and they have detailed explanations of all these ceremonies. Garbhadhanam, just like before you take birth, while the mother is pregnant, even before the pregnancy happens, before the relationship between the man and the woman happens, it begins. So in the past they were experts in these things, that they will invite a soul who whatever they have in their sangalpam or in their mind, what kind of child they want. If they want a very intelligent child, they will have that sangalpam before even the conception happens, before the child conception happens. So those days they were very experienced and very efficient in these things, that they knew how to invite a particular soul to their liking, what they are thinking they want the child to be. There are many personalities who are born like that. They were born in that way. That means before the father, mother, before they engage in a relationship, they are offered a ghee which was chanted with this mantra and given to them. And they will chant, they will take that ghee for so many days prior to conception. And after that, they know that the child which is born will have that quality in the child. This is how it was planned so well, in other words. And during pregnancy stage also, the mother is given continuously, while the baby is in the womb, constantly fed with spiritual knowledge. When he comes out, he is as brilliant as the sun in knowledge and in realization. Such a person will show that tendency even at a very, very early age in life. By the age of 5 or 6, he will have such a power to absorb things. And there are personalities appeared throughout life in this world. Throughout ages, they have appeared like this, in this pattern. They didn't become intelligent overnight. They came here fully prepared for the task what they were entrusted with. So that is that power of the Garbhadhana ceremony, Garbhadhanam. Then there is Pumsavanam, Simandam, Chaulam, Upanayanam, one after the other. All, you can get all these books, you can buy them and read through it, what's all involved in all these things. But they are not important. The important thing to realize is they are all for the body. Nothing to do with the soul. They are all for the body. After purifying the body and after going through all those samskaram, he will get qualified to realize that he is not this body. This is the way it works. This is the way it works. So, it is true that the same thing applies to even Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam also. Most of us are fighting with Bhagavad Gita practically to understand what is Krishna is talking about, isn't it? And we have so much disagreement with Krishna in everything. We have more disagreement with Krishna than agreement. It's a fact of life. Nobody can deny that. Why? Because using this Bhagavad Gita, we will mislead the whole world. It's very easy to do that also. It's not very difficult. It's not very difficult using the Bhagavad Gita. Generally, you can see this in the Bhagavad Gita also. Let me give you some very concrete examples, and you can see how people get misled through their, although they're supposed to be preaching Bhagavad Gita, whatever they have done and they are still doing in this world has nothing to do with Bhagavad Gita. It is their mental concoction that is. And others fall victimized by that. I'll prove that through the different points in the Bhagavad Gita. Through the, if you remember, when Bhagavad Gita was spoken in Kurukshetra, in the battlefield, Arjuna, in the first chapter, spoke some nice things, isn't it? How can I kill my relatives? How can I kill my teachers? How can I kill my family members? This, that and the other. Now, anyone who hears this, they will think Arjuna is such a nice gentleman, isn't it? Whereas Krishna, on the other hand, he's just a troubleshooter, nothing else. This is the normal way human society is. We all want to be nice in this world, isn't it? We want to be nice to everybody in this world. Everyone should recognize such a nice gentleman I am. This is what we are looking for, recognition from the world. Now, because Krishna has spoken that way, Arjuna has spoken that way, and Arjuna says that I can't upset all my friends and people who are present here. They're all my relatives. How can I upset them? He wanted to be the nice person in this world. Nice person in this world, in front of all the relatives and friends. He speaks so nicely. He doesn't find any fault with anyone. And also, everybody will say this. If you read the first chapter, anyone will feel Arjuna is a perfect modern gentleman in that way. Isn't it? It's a perfect gentleman if you read the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, we will discuss first chapter in detail some other time when we get time. But let's understand this. Arjuna's approach was like us. We also feel the same thing. Why should I upset somebody else? Because after all, they are also in this world, they are also in spiritual life. And why should I say against everybody is friendly, I'll be friendly to everyone, and they are my friends, and everyone is good in this world. I will only see the good in everyone. In this way, it is easy to take that route. And if you take that route, you will be accepted by the world also. But here, in spiritual life, we don't want acceptance from the world. We want Krishna's acceptance. And if you want Krishna's acceptance, you have to listen to what Krishna says, not what the world says. If you want to please the world, go ahead and please the world. You'll get what you get at the end. But if you are going to end up in frustration at the end, that is what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. So many things Krishna is saying there, but we don't care about Krishna. We care for the society. That is our biggest disease in us. And we will suffer. We will have to pay the price for it. Because these things are not happening today. It has happened in the past. And people had to pay very high price for that at some stage in life. You will practice your so-called spiritual life whole lifetime. At the end, it's all depression and frustration in life. Why? Because you have not approached the truth in the proper way, how it should go. So, that is why, as soon as Krishna started the second chapter, what did he say to Arjuna? He says to Arjuna, Arjuna, it is like this, kutastva kashmalamidam, vishame samuvastidam, anarajushtam, asurgyam, akirtim karam Arjuna. He says, all you are talking is complete nonsense, he says to him. This is what he started Bhagavad Gita. If you look into, you will see there that he says to Kutastva Kashmalamidam, how did this happen to you like this? You are talking to me such big philosophy. You don't know anything, he says. You are so, practically Krishna says, you are an idiot. That's what he's saying to him. Kutastva Kashmalamidam. Vishame samupasthidam, anarejushtam, asvargyam, akirtim karam Arjuna. It will only bring you, at the end, it's not going to give you any kind of happiness in life. So, this is how spiritual life goes. Arjuna wants to be a nice person to everybody. Nice in this world. Everyone recognizes me as a nice person. I don't take any sides. I'll stay with everybody and I'll please everyone with my own understanding of, because why should I? And it is from this weakness in a person that this nature comes. This Arjuna's weakness, exactly the weakness in all of us, because Bhagavad Gita was spoken on behalf of us. Vedavyas didn't write Bhagavad Gita for Arjuna or Krishna. It was written for us to make us understand that if you don't understand these things, how Krishna has spoken, and if you don't accept it, then there is no point in studying Bhagavad Gita. If you keep on staying in the level of Arjuna's beginning in the first chapter, there is no possibility of going further. There's no possibility. What to talk about hearing Upanishads? Vedanta Shravanam is for those people who have accepted certain principles in spiritual life. Otherwise, it's not possible. It will not work. It's not katha, simply hearing stories there. It's more than that. So, after saying that, Krishna says to Arjuna, isn't it? It was that time Arjuna was fortunate. Why? Arjuna had the sense to think about that he doesn't know. He was willing to accept that. Therefore, he says to Krishna that Shishasteham Shadimam Tvam Prabhanam. We discussed that in the second chapter, isn't it? The whole episode of Arjuna and Krishna in that beginning is a very important step in the Bhagavad Gita. If you study Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that the most fascinating point is that a personality like Arjuna, who spoke with a lot of sentimental feelings. Sentiments doesn't help in spiritual life. What will help in spiritual life is knowledge. not sentiments. You can have your sentiments to anyone in this world and feeling very sentimentally absorbed in that and feeling that a satisfaction inside, so I've been good to everyone. That doesn't help. Jnanam will help. Sentiments won't help. So that's what Krishna is saying there in that second chapter beginning itself. He says that, isn't it? Ashochyan anyashojastvam prajnyavadamscha bhashase gadasuna gadasumscha nani shochandi pandidaha. Isn't it? Why does he say that? Ashochyan anyashojastvam prajnyavadamscha bhashase. You are talking as though you are very learned. Prajnyavadamscha bhashase. But what? Gadasuna gadasumscha nani shochandi pandidaha. That one who knows coming and going is a part of this world, he doesn't get disturbed over that. What does that mean? That statement means a lot. Some people are thinking that they have only a very short time in this world. And in that short time, by hook or crook, they have to establish in this world. This is their defect. This is their problem in this mind, with their mind. Because there is no knowledge inside, complete ignorance. And in that mood, they will go and break all dharma principles, religious principles, everything. And they will carry on their life in this world. And also, faultly, they are thinking inside that they are making progress in spiritual life. That won't work. So that is why that verse is gadasune gadasumscha nani shojandi pandita. It's not only those people are neither living for the dead. No, that's not the only meaning behind that. If you really understand that verse, Krishna is saying there, gadasune gadasumscha, that they coming and going is a part of this process. Body, what we have got, this material body, is only a temporary thing. But we don't finish with this body. We carry on. But it may be in another body. But our purpose is to get out of this body once for all. We don't want to accept another material body again here. That is the goal. But those people who follow that path, they have to accept another body because they have not accepted the truth. That is the problem. That's why Krishna is saying there, Ashochyan anyashojastvam prajnyavadamscha bhashase. Krishna's words are very selective. Krishna is saying there, prajnyavadamscha bhashase. You talk as though you are very learned. But you don't know that thing, he says. Nani shochandi pandidaha. Learned people won't recognize your knowledge. Your so-called jabbering, or what do you call that, the words what Arjuna has spoken. He says, learned people is not going to appreciate that. That is how Krishna started the conversation in the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? Krishna started the conversation in the Bhagavad Gita like that. So, when Krishna spoke all these things to Arjuna, Arjuna had the sense to understand that Krishna is speaking from a higher platform. And because Arjuna understood that, Krishna became the spiritual master, accepted that position and spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. On the other hand, if you look, Yudhishthira Maharaj, look at his life. He will not accept Krishna's words. And therefore, he had to pay a heavy price for it till the last minute. Out of compassion, Krishna eventually brought him to Bhishma and made Bhishma to speak to him the truth, what it is. If you know these things in the Bhagavatam, you will understand these things. We say, we are all like, want to be like Yudhishthira Maharaj, full of dharmic principles, isn't it? For us, dharma is more important. Everyone should be, we don't want to upset anybody, we want to be in the good books of everyone and feeling great pleasure from that. So there, Krishna wanted to say this to Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira, you are not ready for Bhagavad Gita yet. You're not ready for that. Because you are still thinking, you have put all your faith in dharma, not in the knowledge, what Krishna was talking about. He didn't have the faith in the knowledge what Krishna has given, rather than all his faith was in the dharma. Because of that, Krishna has to switch. Krishna has to take Arjuna as his disciple and talk to him about spiritual life and the whole realizations. What comes in the Bhagavad Gita was given to Arjuna directly rather than to Yudhishthira. So you see these two brothers. Yudhishthira is an elder brother. Arjuna is a younger brother. But Arjuna was qualified to receive this transcendental knowledge. Yudhishthira was not. So Yudhishthira had to wait till a proper time comes, and all that hankering, lamentation. Why? Because there's no knowledge inside. That's why Yudhishthira was hankering. Yudhishthira's lamentation was all centered around because of this lack of knowledge inside. Whereas Arjuna If you read Bhagavatam, you will notice when Krishna left this world, Arjuna comes back to Hastinapur, and after seeing Arjuna, Yudhishthira Maharaj understood that Krishna has left this world. And at that time, how did Arjuna come back to his normal state? Through Bhagavad Gita, through the knowledge what Krishna has given. So from there you can understand that the knowledge is so important. Without this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanishads, if you go in the spiritual life, you may do so many things, but at the end, it may not reach that goal what you have looking for, that is realizing the self what we are. Realize the self what we are. Now, that is one aspect of the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna. I hope you have got the point what I was making, that Arjuna's mood in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita appears as though as a gentleman he is speaking, but from Krishna's point of view, it is total ignorance. It's total ignorance. And that ignorant state is not very conducive for understanding, developing spiritual knowledge. But because Arjuna had that sense to surrender to Krishna and accept his authority on spiritual life, so Krishna accepted him and delivered him from that ignorance what he was in before. Now, after saying this, Krishna started saying some things in Bhagavad Gita. The second chapter is Sankhya Yogam. Krishna has spoken Sankhya, isn't it? After that, he immediately moved into that Sankhya Yogam chapter itself. He started talking about Karma Yogam. Is it not? Karma Yogam. And that Karma Yogam is the very basis of one who comes to spiritual life. He starts with that. Karmam is the first thing to sort it out. If you have not sorted karmam, no matter what you do in your rest of the spiritual life, it is not going to get you anywhere. You can make all the noise in this world through all the websites and through all the televisions, programs, all the newspapers. Spiritual life is not under the control of websites and television programs and newspapers and the media and the amount of books you print. Spiritual life has nothing to do with all that. This is completely independent. There what matters is, have you accepted what Krishna is saying or not? Let's look at it this way. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, those who got a Bhagavad Gita, they can look at that. If you take to this verse 47 in the 6th chapter which we are discussing, at the manner. I wanted to come to that earlier today because this is such an important message in the Bhagavad Gita. And we are so ignorant. We are not even accepting Bhagavad Gita. And we are saying we are selling Bhagavad Gita, we are distributing Bhagavad Gita. If we don't accept ourselves, what's the point in doing this? This is my question. And massive ignorance in a mass level doesn't mean anything. Ignorance is ignorance. What happens? Look at that, where Prabhupada writes the commentary on the last chapter. It's Prabhupada's commentary, but it is the principle of Bhagavad Gita. That's all I can say. If you look into verse 47, the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, there is a paragraph which begins, the culmination, that means one, two, third paragraph, if you look, the purport, third paragraph. Let's read that paragraph. And let's see what you feel about this. It begins with this. The culmination, you got that paragraph?
Yes.
Which one? Yeah. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in Bhakti Yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point in Bhakti Yoga. Yeah? Then, yoga actually means Bhakti Yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of Bhakti Yoga. Okay? Then he says, from the beginning of Karma Yoga to the end of Bhakti Yoga is a long way to self-realization. Yeah? From the beginning of Karma Yoga to the end of Bhakti Yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma Yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When Karma Yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called Jnana Yoga. This stage is called Jnana Yoga. When Jnana Yoga increases in meditation on the Super Soul by different physical processes and the mind on is on him, it is called Ashtanga Yoga. And when one surpasses Ashtanga Yoga, comes to the point of Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it's called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. So, Krishna says, you have to begin with Karma Yoga. And my understanding, as far as Prabhupada mentioned in all other books, is Karma Yoga means no kartrutvam, no bhoktrutvam. I am not the doer, I am not the enjoyer, no ragam, na dvesham. These are all part of the Karma Yoga. And we are people now, we are teaching Bhakti Yoga to the world where we couldn't even get to the Karma Yoga stage. Is it not? We can't even reach the Karma Yoga state. That means the first step towards Bhakti Yoga is the Karma Yoga process. Even that step we can't put our feet on, and we want to teach Bhakti Yoga to the world. So where is the ignorance? Where is our brain? The so-called big learned people, where is the brain? Krishna is saying here, and Prabhupada is saying the same thing, that the begins with Karma Yoga. These first six chapters in the Bhagavad Gita is referring to this Karma Yoga. And we are so blissful about everything what we are doing, isn't it? We are so advanced spiritually now with all our activities, that so many centers we have opened and so many people are chanting Hare Krishna. Yes, all fine, but where is this? This has not come into. And if you look into that, you will see there further. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name, Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, or Dhyana Yogi, Raja Yogi, Hatha Yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all the other yogas. Again, another misunderstanding for us. What Prabhupada is saying there is, if one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, but we have already reached there, what can you do? Prabhupada never said that you have reached the stage of Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada says, if you are fortunate enough to get there, that means, after passing through all these other processes, if you have reached that stage, you are very fortunate. That's what it means. But now what we have taken is, we have all reached there. We are all bhaktas, great devotees. Bhakti Yoga only we practice, nothing else. So, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all the other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalayas, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. So, I was saying this only to make you realize that there are a lot of pitfalls in our understanding. And that pitfalls, if we don't take it seriously, it's up to you, but this has to be spoken. It's a fact of life. If all the traditions, they will not accept anyone who has not accepted Karma Yoga as a part, the first step in the spiritual life, well, doesn't matter which tradition it is, whether it is Advaitam, Dvaitam, Vishishtadvaitam, Shuddhadvaitam, Kevaladvaitam, Ajindibhedavaitam, doesn't matter. For any tradition, it is this Karma Yoga that is the first stage in spiritual life. Because it is from there, why it is required is, it is this through Karma Yoga one gets purified. And if we cannot have a system where there is Karma Yoga in place, where is the question of getting progress in the spiritual path? Where is the question? Question doesn't arise. So, anyway, coming back to the this point I was saying before, that the understanding of Krishna consciousness is that the process is there as a set process, what Krishna has given us. Karmam, from karmam, jnanam comes. After jnanam, you can go through ashtangam to bhakti, or you also can go to bhakti through jnanam. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, if you study there, we will see, the way it's spoken is like this, karmam, jnanam, ashtangam is there, and bhakti is there, and again jnanam comes. There is a little bit of differences in all these things between different acharyas when they spoke about that. Some acharyas gave importance to jnanam, some acharyas gave importance to bhakti. That doesn't matter, because in the higher stages bhakti and jnanam is one. It won't make any difference. If you have come through bhakti to jnanam or through jnanam to bhakti, you are in the same state. You are in the same state. There won't be any difference. It is in the Bhagavatam, it's clearly spoken like that. So that is not an issue we have to worry about at this stage in life. Our concern is that the very first step we can't put our feet on, and where is the possibility of making any success in the bhakti process. So that is why, especially in the bhakti process, I have seen so many people like this. They will come, they will create a complete nonsense of it, and then they will leave this world, putting a lot of other people into misunderstanding about things. They've done that. It's not here it happened today, it has happened throughout the history. This has happened. In the name of bhakti, they will teach so many false things to people. They won't follow Shastram. They will become very sentimental and very emotional about everything. And they think this is all bhakti, and that bhakti will save you from this. And then when some disaster strikes in life, then they are completely panicking. Why is it happened like this to me? I've been such a great devotee. I've been chanting so many rounds every day. I've done so much deity worship, and I've taken initiation, and I've done this, I've done that. And why did this happen to me? They ask this question. Why? Because there is no knowledge there. They have not understood what Krishna means. For us, what we want Krishna, a very soft person who's nice to us all the time, gives us everything what we ask him. Like a nice granddad spoiling the grandchild. Yeah, sitting there giving to you everything what you're asking him. Don't interfere in my life, but give me everything what I'm asking for. This is how we are relating with God, or Krishna also. We do the same thing. And these are the type of people like that. Oh, Krishna is so nice, he's so beautiful, I love him so much. And all kinds of statements like this, completely on a sentimental level, they talk about this. And the same thing, they also want a guru like that. One say, here you come to me, give us one class, more than that. I can't take it more than that. I'll send you a check every month, and we keep this relationship at that distance. That's fine. Don't want anything more than that. Is this anything good at the end? Complete waste of time. Nothing is going to happen out of this. Unless this proper understanding what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, if that's not penetrating inside and changing our way of thinking, what good is this at the end? What good is it? All these sentiments will remain as sentiments. At the end, we'll go our way, he goes his way. That's all. So this is the main thing, what we have our misunderstanding in spiritual life about various things like this. That as far as God is concerned, our understanding is he's there at the temple, or he's living somewhere in Golokam. He's keeping an eye on us. He's keeping an eye on us. Am I doing something wrong? Is he keeping a record of my activities? Will punish me, and I have a fear of him altogether here. Sitting here, I'm frightened of him there. And that is, in English they call it God-fearing, isn't it? It's a funny word, this God-fearing business. If you have to be so frightened of him all the time, you may as well say goodbye to him, because he is more trouble than help. So this is the misunderstanding. This is the thing what Upanishads is getting rid of us from our head. You see, all other religious processes, if you look, you will see there, this perception is very strong in the mind. God is sitting somewhere up there watching us, everything what we are doing. So we shouldn't do certain things because I'm frightened that he may do something to me. So I have to be careful of what I'm doing. So this is that state of God-fearing. You know what Bhagavatam says about that? Yavat syal guna vaishamyam tavan nanatvamalpano yaval parandram tadeivahi. We discussed this in the Ekadasi Skandam, if you remember. Who remembers this? It's all gone long ago. Yaval syal guna vaishamyam tavan nanatvamalpano yaval parandram tadeivahi. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Uddhava, it is like this. As long as these three modes of nature is working in you, and if you have this mentality that he is sitting somewhere else and looking after you from there, tavan nanatum atmana, you will see everything in this world is so different. You won't see Krishna's presence in anything in this world. Nanatva atmano yavad, and once this nanatvam, diversity comes to your understanding, paradandram tadaivahi, you are completely bound for life after life. There is no possibility of escaping from that. This is Krishna's words, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇన్ ద భాగవతం, యూ కెన్ టేక్ ఇట్ అండ్ లుక్ అట్ ఇట్. యావత్ స్యాల్ గుణవైషమ్యం తావన్ నానాత్వం ఆల్పన, నానాత్వం ఆల్పనో యావల్ పారతంత్రం తదేవహి. దెన్ యావత్ స్యాల్ అస్వతంత్రత్వం తావద్ ఈశ్వరదో భయం. He says, so long as you are in that bound state, you are always frightened of Krishna. He says, Krishna says, you are frightened of God. Yavatsyal asvatantratvam. That means, as long as you are that, asvatantratvam means this bound state. Asvatantrata means this bound state. Yavatsyal asvatantratvam. As long as you have that asvatantrata, this bound state, tavad ishwaradabhayam, you are always frightened to do anything, say anything. That is where this feeling comes that I have to be always not to criticize anybody. You know these kind of things that is spoken now, that oh, you shouldn't criticize anybody. You shouldn't say anything against anyone. This is quite common nowadays. Devotees talking like this. Where is this? Completely sentimental. This is not shastric. This is their sentiments talking, that you shouldn't criticize anybody. Where does it say like that? Shastram doesn't say like that. Shastram is saying like this, that why this has happened? Yavatsal asvatantratvam tavad ishwarado bhayam te mukhyanti shucharpidaha. Life after life, he will be hankering and lamentation will happen to him in that way. So there are things to take note of and there are things to be kept in mind while observing spiritual life and following spiritual path, and not to take the world for granted. The world will tell you one thing. Who cares for this world and what does this world mean? That it is this world that is misleading us more than anything else. I mentioned many times, the society, so-called society. You fall into that trap, you are fallen there. There itself you are trapped in that. If you take shelter of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, what Krishna has spoken, that is our shelter. If you bring society and take shelter of the society and do business with Krishna, then the whole thing will be a disaster at the end. If you take Krishna's shelter and do business with the society, then there is a possibility of escaping from this world. You can't do the other way. What we are doing at the moment, we are taking shelter of the society, thinking that, oh, if I upset someone, what will happen to me? Oh, they will reject me. Then I won't have that his support. All these ideas are going through our head, isn't it? So, yavatsal asvatantratvam tavad ishwarado bhayam. You have to be frightened of Krishna. Why this fear has come? Because you have not accepted what Krishna is saying or what Krishna has spoken to Arjuna or to Uddhava. This is where that problem is coming from. So, coming back to this, that. So here, the question has come, as I mentioned before, that all these samskaras, what we are going back to that where we started there. Samskarams we have talked about, isn't it? There is samskaram. For what? For the body. Only for the body. And the samskaram is performed by the body so that the body is purified and the body, and to tell us eventually that you are not this body. Eventually, you are not this body. For example, an animal gives birth to a baby. A human baby is also born. Both are same. Practically, there is no difference, isn't it? Baby is born, for whether it is a cow or a or a lady, human birth. What is the difference? A baby is born. But then what is the difference? One gets purified by that process, that birth. Process of birth, it gets purified. And in that process, we are trying to remove certain impurities in that body by these purification processes. So, this is all prescribed as different rituals in the Vedas. In the Vedas, they are mentioned as different rituals. So, those who are performing these kind of rituals, they are called Vaidigas or Purohits and things like that. And they are part of the Sanatana Dharma. Okay. From the day before he enters into the womb till the day he sees the golden screen, he has got a list of things to do. He's got a number of things to do before that. So one who lives according to that, he is called a Sana, who follows Sanatana Dharma, who follows the Sanatana Dharma. So that activity, what he has to do during this time, from his point in birth right up to the even before taking birth, right up to the death, he follows in the Vedas what is called Karmakandam. Karmakandam is for them. You see, the Karmakandam what we talk about is meant for them. So this Karmakandam process is a very elaborate process, and Krishna mentions here that some people are satisfied with Karmakandam. Some people are satisfied with that Karmakandam. They are just happy to keep on doing these rituals day after day. They'll do everything, all the rituals on time, every time. And they feel that we have done all these things and they are satisfied with that. They won't go beyond than that. They can't go. They are stuck in that situation. So if somebody is stuck in that situation, Krishna is saying, don't disturb him. Don't disturb him. That is Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita. If somebody is stuck in that state, let him remain where he is and don't move him. The words we can look at in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see a verse, na buddhi vedam janayed. Ajnanam karma sanginam doshayet sarvakarmani vidwan yukta samacharan. That's the verse. Look at that verse. Na buddhivedam janayet. He is stuck in the Karmakandam. And you are saying to him, na buddhivedam janayet. Don't upset him because he is stuck in that. He is unable to understand anything higher than that. Na buddhi vedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam. He has got karma sangam. With karmam, he has got stuck with karmam. Ajnanam. Why? Because of ignorance. He is thinking that this Karmakandam is everything in my life. And in the Bhagavadam, there is examples of that, isn't it? Prajina Barhis and all that. Now, if you see, in the Hindu society, what's happening? That's also interesting to look at. We also feel, I have not done this, I have not done that. Baby is born, we didn't perform this ceremony for him, we didn't perform that ceremony for him. And it becomes a kind of a hangover in their mind. And they get stuck with that. Why? It's a kind of that Karmakandam disease. Na buddhi vedam janayet, Krishna is saying here, Ajnanam karma sanginam joshayet sarvakarmani vidwan yukta samacharan. This is the verse. Joshayet sarvakarmani. Throw away all this karma. Vidwan yukta samacharan. Let him see the truth of the soul above everything else. So you can see here the problem that unless you have escaped from Karmakandam, you cannot enter into Jnanakandam, to the process of knowledge, unless you have escaped from Karmakandam. Now, Karmakandam, because it is practically impossible to follow through in this age, Krishna, knowing very well, he changed that Karmakandam and given us this concession in the form of Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga has come from that. Karma Yoga has come from this, how to purify using Karmakandam into Karma Yoga. It has come to that. Okay. That Karma Yoga is a process Krishna is suggesting to us. The Karma Yoga, what Krishna has expressed in the Bhagavad Gita, is the first step to follow through so that this knowledge will get in. This knowledge of the soul will get inside. That is the reason why Krishna has spoken about Karma Yoga so strictly and so specifically in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself. The very beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself. And if you look into Ekadasi Skandam also, you will see in the 10th chapter of the Canto 11, Krishna talks about Karma Yoga to a great extent. So, after saying that, all that, so, if it is performed like that, that he becomes purified, and he says that, na buddhi bedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam doshayel sarvakarmani vidwan yukta samacharan. So, what it is that person who lives in that Karmakandam state, he lives a life, whatever Vedas have instructed, he is following them, recognizing the authority of the Vedas, at the same time not giving any trouble to anyone, these are all important part of that Karma Yoga, that not giving any trouble to anyone, at the same time he himself lives a life in such a way that he doesn't have to go through a lot of trouble in this world. And what will happen is, up to this point, Karmakandam can take you. Up to this stage. That means you can live in this world follow the karmakandam and be satisfied with that. Don't give a trouble to anyone else, and you don't have to take any other trouble more than that, except that you are performing all these ceremonies on time, whenever that is due, and peacefully continue with your existence in this world. That is how much it can take you. This karmakandam can take you. But that itself is a big thing, isn't it? Because we find ourselves difficult in this world in many ways. So many miseries coming in one way or the other. And therefore, we have so much problems in various areas. So that is why when we go to Krishna with our list. So therefore, he will not reach the perfect state of happiness. This person who is following this karmakandam, he will not reach the perfect state of happiness, nor liberation. Neither liberation nor a perfect state of happiness will happen to him. But when you are living in your society or community, you can say dharmam. That dharmam yasachad abhyudayaha nishrayasaha sad dharmaha. That it will only help you that without disturbing anybody else, that even if others disturb you, trouble you, you don't trouble them in that way, that without giving any pain to another living entity, if you have managed to live like this in this world, he is called person who is following dharma. Who is following dharma. So you can see dharmam and karmakandam are very closely connected. Dharmam karmakandam is closely connected. So living through this karmakandam process without giving trouble to others, without putting yourself into a lot of trouble, if you live in this world, performing all these different sacrifices which is listed there, and if you live a peaceful life like that, it will bring you up to a point in life. Where is that point? Just like when you came here, you came by car. You park the car somewhere, isn't it? So where you park the car, up to that time point, karmakandam will bring you. From there, you have to walk here, isn't it? You have to walk here. So that is where the karmakandam's limitations. Karmakandam can only take you to that point. And you can see that karmakandam when you perform, Krishna says, because of the difficulty of performing karmakandam, Krishna gave us this alternative option of karma yogam. Make that karmakandam into karma yogam, which will also bring you only up to that point where we park the car. From there, other programs have to start. So it is a complex thing to know these things. That karmakandam has its limitations. Karma yogam also has its limitations. Karma yoga also has its limitations. So Krishna says that those people who are in that state, na buddhi vedam janayet, don't disturb them. Why? If you disturb them, they will lose that and they lose everything. They won't have anything afterwards. Na buddhi vedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam. What can you do? They are in ajnanam. Krishna is saying like this. Ajnanam karma sanginam. Joshayet sarva karmani vidwan yukta samacharan. That a person who is looking for perfection, he cannot stop there. He cannot stop there. So, saying that, Krishna says here that dharmam, what does it do? It creates chitta shuddhi. So, that dharmam, what you are doing for chitta shuddhi, for purification, which is called karma yogam, if it is not executed properly, even chitta shuddhi won't happen. You see the problem? That if you have not executed that dharmam, that means the way we live in this world, how we make our living, how we use the what Krishna has given to us, how much right we have in what we do and what we do, all these are important things in that. You just cannot do things and cheat the world and cheat Krishna. That's not possible. You can't cheat the world, but you can't cheat Krishna. That is a known fact, isn't it? So spiritual life is like this. That if we go along with such principles, where one even does not follow the dharmic way of life, where is the question of making any spiritual progress? It's impossible to understand this. That any Acharya's commentary, if you take, there is exhausting commentaries on this. And you think that they were all fools to write all that? Because in these things there is no concession available. anybody. You can't twist and change according to your liking because it suits me at this point in time in my life, I'll do like this. It doesn't work like that. There is a law, very strict law, and Shastram is there for you to guide us through. To guide us through. What does Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita? Ya Shastram Vidhim Ulsrijya Vartade Kamakaragat. If you are not following Shastram, Krishna says, you are working based on your sense gratification and I have nothing to do with it. And outwardly, everything looks glamorous and glorifying, everything fantastic. But if this is the principle on which it's working, it requires a deeper understanding, I think a deeper analysis of the whole thing. This is the point I'm trying to drive at. That Krishna is saying here that only a person who has followed this Karma Yoga properly and come to the point of Chittashuddhi. Chittashuddhi means purification of his consciousness. Only such a person will be qualified to listen to Upanishads. Otherwise he won't make any head and tail of it. Like for example, Prabhupada has given this Ishopanishad, isn't it? It's our Ishopanishad. You read this Ishopanishad and you tell me that how much have you understood from this. You may say to me so many things that I understood this, I understood that. Sometimes devotees also say, they read this Upanishad and you know what they said? One devotee told me this. He said, I took one mantra from that and I will chant that mantra at the time of my death, he said. What was that mantra? Mantra says like this, Kradosmara, Kradasmara. I don't know anything what you are talking about, but whatever I have done in my life, please remember me at the time of death and protect me, he says. What else can you say? Because you have not understood anything what he is saying here. The sages, there's only 18 mantras in this Upanishad. Ishopanishad is only 18 mantras. If you take each one of these mantras, including the first invocation itself, Purnamidam, Purnamidam, that first one itself, the amount of commentary on that and the deeper understanding of that will reveal to you at what level, subtle level, the sages have spoken this Upanishads to us. The most subtle level they have gone in to talk to us is 18 verses to us. So that verse which Krishna said, the devotee was talking about, I think it is the So, 17th one. I'll read the mantra anyway. You can look at it yourself. Vayur anilam amritam athedam basmantam shariram. Om kradosmara kradam smara, kradosmara kradam smara. That's all it is. Mantram is very simple. All it says is here, Vayur anilam amrdam, adhedam basmandam shariram. Let this temporary body be burnt into ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. That's all. It's very simple, isn't it? Can you read it? It's nothing much. He says, his body will die one day, it will turn into ashes. And all you have to tell him, tell Krishna is, remember me all I have done for you. And based on that, you take me back, come back to God, in other words. That's what it is. So, kradosmara, 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 he says. So, like this. So, that is the difficulty. Then Upanishads, in order to understand, Krishna is saying, first to begin with Karma Yoga. Karmam has to be pure. If that there is no dharmam, even that Karma Yoga, what is the question of any kind of progress, Chitta Shuddhi happening there? So when there is no Chitta Shuddhi, what happens? That means you are completely under the control of Maya. Maya will take control of your spiritual life. And Maya will dictate to you what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And then you will be busy with Maya for the rest of the life. You will get absorbed in that Maya.
that I'll be busy with acquiring assets in this world, I'll be busy with collecting followers in this world, as much money as possible, and recognition in this world. This will all become the spiritual life. What you have started, and much later, at the life, at the very fag end of life, realization comes, what have I done in my life? And but then it is too late. There's nothing you can do about it. Whole life is wasted in all these things, not knowing that there is a set process, karmam. Through karmam, process on to jnanam, through jnanam to bhakti. Or through karmam, comes to bhakti platform to jnanam. Either way, it doesn't matter. It is there in the Upanishads in either way. Jnanam and karmam ultimately ends up. Bhagavatam is not only a bhakti grantham. It's not only a book of bhakti. It's also a book of knowledge. So as much as if we are serious about spiritual life, we have to accept what Krishna says, not what the society says. Society will tell you all nonsense. If you want to listen to that, then you have to listen and go along with it. But don't regret later that nobody told you about it. Nobody told us about it. Some people say like that, oh, nobody told us about it before. But then it's too late. Nobody has to tell you. Krishna is saying there. Prabhupada is written there in the purport. So what more do you want? Proof more than that. But if you're not accepting it, what can you do? If you want to be a nice person in front of everyone, everybody recognizes you, oh, he's so, such a nice person, he has no enemies, no friends. These things are there, but that is spoken only for different reasons. This maturity we have to develop through Shastram. How to understand Shastram, how to live by Shastram, not follow the society, that we have to know. It's the mature stage in life. One has to develop that maturity. Where to say yes and where to say no. In certain stages you have to say no. That is wrong. And when it's wrong, it is wrong. You have to say that openly. Wrong. It is wrong something. You don't have to feel any hesitation because that person will get upset about it. He is using Bhagavad Gita for his sense gratification. As I mentioned so many times before, these people have made business out of Bhagavad Gita. They use Bhagavad Gita is meant for self-realization. It's not for making business. It's not for making money. And the Swamis and Gurus, they've gone to all sorts of this kind of things. And people have taken, completely fallen into this. And this is bigger cheating than anything else. Prabhupada says any service performed in this way is a disservice, not a service. It's a disservice to Bhagavad Gita. When you start using Bhagavad Gita for purposes like that, for any purpose like that. So that option is left to us. But we will talk all these things, whether we like it or not, it has to be spoken. It is the fact of life. It is in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is telling us certain things. And as we go along now, we will discuss it in more detail about the Upanishads. And Upanishads are not easy to digest. It is the culmination of knowledge. Culmination of knowledge. Bhagavad Gita is also an Upanishad, as you know. Bhagavad Gita is also an Upanishad. And why it's an Upanishad? Because a lot of it is from Upanishad. It has come from Upanishad. We say Krishna, many people misunderstand. Even this understanding wasn't there in many people in our society. You can see, they used to think, oh, Krishna spoke 5,000 years ago Bhagavad Gita. And prior to that, he spoke to Sun God. So they think it is some textbook which is separately Krishna has written and printed and published on his own. It didn't come out like that. Bhagavad Gita didn't come out like that. Bhagavad Gita comes from a few Upanishads. Mainly it is Kathopanishad, as is supported with Chandokyam, Shvetashvataram, Kainopanishad and Ishavasyam. All of them have a certain role. It's all pulled from different places. Krishna packaged it. Krishna packaged it. You can ask Krishna if you meet him one day, that where did Bhagavad Gita come from? He'll tell you. He'll tell you these things. He's not going to keep it secret because he knows where he has taken it from. But what Krishna has done is that arranged this Vedic knowledge in such a nice way and gave it to us. So that let that remain as a landmark for the many generations to come. And therefore all the Acharyas, although Bhagavad Gita comes in the middle of Mahabharatam, it's in the middle of Mahabharatam Bhagavad Gita has come, isn't it? And Mahabharatam is full of dharmam, spoken about dharmam, 125,000 verses. And in the middle of that, he kept this Bhagavad Gita there. Why? Why he kept Bhagavad Gita there? Because to present Bhagavad Gita, he needed a background. That is this Mahabharatam. You must know this. Mahabharatam was not written as the history But Mahabharata was written to present Bhagavad Gita to this world, because Bhagavad Gita is the cream of this Mahabharata. Now, when we read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna has told us certain things, and if we don't listen to it, and you do things on your own and justify it, what can Krishna do about it? What can Krishna do about it? And that is why those people who are not accepting Bhagavad Gita and who don't want to discuss about these things and who are busy with their printing and distribution, they have to think twice about it. And this one element is the most important thing in the Bhagavad Gita. That and this point Prabhupada has spoken so many times, but it is bypassed. It's not taken seriously anymore. So therefore all these problems. So Mahabharatam was spoken, 125,000 verses. In the middle of that, Vedavyasa Maharshi put Bhagavad Gita to us. So in order to present Bhagavad Gita to us, you need a background, and that is why Mahabharatam was brought in. Mahabharatam was brought in. And following Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, all the other great spiritual authorities, they also found the beauty of Bhagavad Gita, that the message of Bhagavad Gita does not compromise in any way with the knowledge of the Upanishads, with the knowledge of the Vedanta Sutram. So what they did, they kept Bhagavad Gita along with Brahma Sutram or Vedanta Sutram and along with the Upanishads. So that is how these three systems have come into existence. One is Bhagavad Gita, one is Brahma Sutram, and third one is Upanishads. When all these three things combined together, they form what is known as Prasthanatrayam. It is this Prasthanatrayam based on which whole Vedic philosophy existed for so long a time. All the Acharyas who had come, who have supported, who followed the Vedic tradition, they accepted this Prasthanatrayam process. They won't go outside that. That was their process. I talked about this before in the Bhagavatam class also, when we went into Ekadasha Skandam, but I'm sure it is very much gone from the mind. So if I'm again repeating that, that Prasthanatrayam means Brahma Sutram, Upanishads, and Bhagavad Gita. So Acharyas gave prime importance to Bhagavad Gita because of its clarity and because the way Krishna spoke to Arjuna in such a 700 verses, the very essence of all the Upanishads packaged so well that the truth is realized through Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavad Gita is our key text. It's our key text because that is where the absolute truth is talking about self-realization. Isn't it? Absolute truth is talking about self-realization. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is important. So, therefore, before we go into this Upanishad, we have a few more classes. We need to talk about that. A lot of other things too. And as you go progress in this direction, you will understand that the situation is very, very grave, in the sense that unless we understand the gravity of the situation, and if we don't take it in that way, in that spirit, this what we are talking about, if it is not possible to accept it, if you still find the world is important and all my friends are important, all my society is important, then please leave this Bhagavad Gita and fulfill all your desires in the society and the friendship and society, friendship, love, all kind of things, whatever we have, and then come to Bhagavad Gita after that. That will be the best thing to do. Because these two things won't go side by side. They will not work. Society is there. That is for Vyavaharam. That you have to leave it at that point. But if you start mixing these two things, thinking that my spiritual life is dependent on that society, and bring society into my spiritual life, I will be lost at the end. They are not to be mixed. They are to be separate. That is its position. You have to leave it at that. It has no importance than that. If you think that society is helping you spiritually, you can go and participate in that. But that society often, as I have mentioned before, if they are not even accepting that very fundamentals of Bhagavad Gita, where is the question of anything else after that? Where is it? How can you justify it? Anything. So that is where we are today. And we will continue later on Monday. We'll continue this study of the Upanishads. And as we continue more and more, you will see it will all make sense to you, because There's a lot of things to understand from Ishopanishad. Isham kenam katha prasnam munda manduke taituri aidareyam chandokyam brihadaranyam. These are the 10 major Upanishads on which commentaries were written by all the acharyas in the past. Why did they take? They were not daft. They were intelligent people, and they have created such strong and sound background for this Vedic philosophy through their commentaries and through their realizations. And they were not people who are presenting to us some God sitting up somewhere else in another planet, whom we don't even know where we'll go, what is going to happen to us. And always we are living here full of fear of Him, thinking that, will He take me back? Will He take me back? Will He take me back? This is not spiritual life. Spiritual life is right here now. What's going to happen to me? What's my connection with Krishna? Here I have to realize it. And before I leave this body, is there any way I can avoid coming back here again? This is the question in front of us. Our question is not after death what will happen. After death what will happen, what's the point? If somebody promises me, it's like a post-dated check, isn't it? Then after death, where I will go? Where is the guarantee? Nowadays what's happening is that it is so unfortunate that things have gone in this direction. People are dying. They're saying they've put on Prabhupada's tape, heard the tape and died and went back to the spiritual world. If you keep all these kind of arguments, it's not going to fly. It's not going to work. There's nowhere in the Shastram all this is spoken. This is our concoction, all these things. That you put a tape somewhere, Prabhupada is chanting. Of course, it's nice to hear Prabhupada chanting. There's no question about that. But Prabhupada has expected all sorts of other things from us, which we are not taken note of. We completely ignored all that. We did all what we want throughout our life. And at the end of the life, I put the Prabhupada's tape, I heard that, and I left the body and went back home back to Godhead. And people are openly talking like this. You will see this this is not how the acharyas never spoke like this. They have told us very clearly, live in this way, get this stage of different stages in spiritual life, follow that process, and if you follow it strictly, rigidly, there is a possibility that you will understand all these things. Bhagavad Gita is knowledge. It's not purely bhakti alone. Bhakti and knowledge is completely mixed in that Bhagavad Gita. You may say that Prabhupada spoke about bhakti so strongly in Bhagavad Gita, people get the impression it's all bhakti. No, it's all the six last chapters, everybody agrees that it's purely knowledge, isn't it? So if that knowledge is so important, how can we ignore it? Similarly, the first six chapters is all about purification, karma yoga. How can you ignore it? And if you start saying that we are the masters of Bhagavad Gita because we are purely bhakti, we follow, where is it going to get? So people will laugh at you if you say these things. People who know these things, they will laugh if you say these things. So there is so much to say. So we'll do that from next Monday. We'll discuss the same thing and hopefully we'll see what happens. So we'll have a small kirtan then.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada.